Thanks for tuning in to the Lean 911 podcast, where you'll have a voice directly from the Gemba. I will rely on my three decades of Lean successes, as well as my failures, to answer your most challenging questions regarding your Lean transformation. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio, President and CEO of Lean Horizons Consulting, and the principal architect of the Danaher Business System. Looking forward to your questions. Now, let's go to the Gemba.
Welcome to episode 51, and I am excited to have a very good friend of mine, a new friend pretty much. We just kind of met over the last, I think we knew of each other, but really got to know each other over the last year. But I have Griselda Abuzlaman.
There you go.
Is that good?
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Not as hard as, it's harder than DeLuzio, but not quite as hard. But but Griselda, nice to meet you. Now you're an established, very well-known Lean, I hate to use the word guru. That sounds so...
Lean master by certification with Shingajitsu.
Master, okay. Well, you're master with Shingajitsu. You've got a lot of Shingajitsu original TPS experience, right, which makes you special. And I think that puts you in a class that is kind of neat. You probably have been fired by them many times during the day, right? So have I. And but they always hired me back at the end of the day to come back for more abuse the next day. So
mm-hmm.
But I wanted to have you on the show. I was on yours the other day and just get to know you and get my people who watch me, which they watch all over the world. I get notes from all over the place, the Middle East and China and Europe and all over the place. I get notes about them watching. I must not be as good as you, though, because they always say, I listen to you on my way to work in the car. So it's like, I have nothing better to do, so I'm going to listen to your podcast, Mark. But this
no,
is
no, they have so many others to choose from, Mark, but they choose yours. So
that's yes, they said they did. Okay. Lean911.com is the podcast. But anyway, Griselda, why don't you tell us about yourself? Don't you hate that question?
I love that question, Mark.
Oh,
and
you
thank
do?
You so much. I do. And thank you so much for having me on your show. It is my pleasure and my honor to be here chatting with you.
I hope this is not the only time, by the way.
Oh, absolutely not. I know we've gone to, kind of get to know each other and hopefully also work together real soon here. But in general, I am a Lean Master by certification. I certified back in the early 90s with Shingajitsu, which I know you work with them as well. I work with them in the U.S. and Japan. Bottom line is I learned a lot from that team, from those guys, you know, my senseis, my friends, but challenged me in every way. So I became a Lean Master. With that, I went into corporate America for 29 fantastic years to practice what I had learned and keep on learning and refining it. Recently, in the last year and a half now, entrepreneur. So I am starting my own consultancy as yourself. Lean business excellence is what I call it. And actually, at the time, there was a pull for coaching as well. So I started with excellence coaching and lean business excellence, individual focused and company focused.
Yep.
I ended up merging the two just because it was simpler that way. But I am a coach and a consultant, and I serve people and companies to achieve profitability or achieve people's personal development goals. That's me. That's what I do. I love doing it. Like yourself, I do it all around the world. And it gives me great satisfaction to help them achieve their objectives.
No, that's fantastic. And by the way, for those who don't know, and a lot of people don't know about Shingajitsu, Shingajitsu, it's a Japanese word meaning new technology. At least that's what they told me. And
me too.
But the originators of Shingajitsu were five men who were a team of 10 that were handpicked by Taiichi Ono to implement the Toyota production system, So these five people broke out, and we at Danaher, at Jake Brake, and I just so happened to be there at the time in 1987, we brought them over to Jake Brake in Bloomfield, Connecticut, which was a Danaher division then. And I was in finance and then eventually went into operations there. But that we were the first to bring them over in 87, and the originals, Iwata, who... God rest his soul, passed away. Nakao, who's still kicking around, he's in his 80s. Yeah. And I'm trying to get a schedule to go see him when he's in the U.S. Yeah. And I will let you know about that.
Yeah.
Then you had Niwa, who is retired. Nino, who passed away, and Takanaka, who I think he might have passed away. I'm not sure, but those are the original five, and they worked directly for Ono, and they idolized Tashi Ono. So when you have a Shingajitsu background, the thing about it is, you heard it right from, if you want to use a phrase, right from the horse's mouth. Okay. All right. You didn't hear from another third-party consultant. The telephone game didn't happen through translation. And, so it's very special that you had that background. And also in Japan as well, along with I did several study missions over there with them. So anyway, it's phenomenal. To me, you're like special in a lot of different ways, but that's one way. And now tell us about your personal background. And you wrote a book, which is just coming out. And tell us about your book. And your book really is a little bit of an indication of your life, really, and what that's all about. So kind of give us a little view on that.
It is. So the title of the book is From the Border to the Boardroom. I am from the Brownsville, Texas border. That's where I was born and raised. My parents are immigrants of Mexico. And it's really the journey and the challenges and the, adversity of going from a border town. Where a lot of people, let's just say that many around us, even within the same town, don't think they're going to accomplish much. They're not going to achieve much, right? They're
Interesting.
capped in some way. At least that's the stereotype, that's the stigma. So going from that mind mentality to leading boardroom conversations and meetings and mergers and acquisitions and integrations around the world, I ended up deploying across multiple countries. 26 overall countries that I've worked in, and I've set up manufacturing facilities literally from the ground up. You would love this because I know you're great at this too, but from swampland and soil to this very optimal manufacturing facility, right? But that's really my humble beginnings, right? I love where I was born and raised. My teachers, my friends, there's a lot that we grew up with together. There was a lot of, adversity, challenges. It's a poverty-stricken town, but we made it through. We persevered through all that. And that's what the book is about, is how do you take certain challenging moments, adversity, because we're all going to have them, roller coaster of life. It's just the way it goes. We're going to take those adverse moments and turn them into what I call tremendous opportunities, right? So whenever we're feeling down by, whether it's the loss of someone or whether it's discrimination, I'm like, hey, our kids will never accomplish that. I'm like, well, show you what our kids can do in Brownsville, Texas. And so with that, right, comes the power of passion and coming togetherness and teamwork, and you accomplish tremendous things. And that's what I write in the book, right? It's like every chapter has a story and a lesson of what I got out of that. But it starts with my family in Mexico, Mark. I don't know if you know that, but it starts with early humble beginnings in Mexico with my grandmother and the challenges that they had back in the, early 30s and 40s, with measles taking over three of her children and all of that, right? So we think of challenging times today and what we had, it's nothing compared to what they overcame, right? And so that gives me
And by the
optimism.
way, the depression wasn't just germane to the United States either.
No,
In the
absolutely.
30s, there was a 10-year depression, and I won't get into that, but you and I talked about the Federal Reserve the other day, and
We
they are
did,
the
yeah.
reason for that depression, believe it or not. But
Absolutely.
anyway, yeah, so it was worldwide, and Mexico got hit as well pretty hard
Absolutely.
with that. So wow. So you're saying basically your Brownsville humble beginnings. By the way, help me out there. What's the town across the border?
Matamoros, Tamaulipas. That's where
Oh,
both of my parents were born, in Matamoros, Tamaulipas, which is a little bit of a challenging area. If you know much about the last 10 years in that area, even when way back when I was in high school, there's a lot of unpleasant things that would happen on the border, on border towns. There's even cults, there's drug cartels, there's a kind of things that don't let the town flourish as much as it could, right? But that's the nature of what people in those towns go through. But yeah, Matamoros is on the other side. I have family. My mom's side of the family is in Matamoros. My dad's side of the family is now sprinkled mostly through Texas, but there's some like me that are out in Florida and other places. But that's our neighbor.
So what were some of the lessons you learned growing up? I think, and why do you think you of all people flourished and didn't accept the, if you want to call it, the caste system, really. There's sometimes, I think sometimes we, depending on where we grow up, even in the United States, because I've
Right.
been to India several times, and they have a built-in caste system over there. But
Yes.
sometimes I think in our own minds we have a caste system based on our surroundings and how we get, how we're grown up, and how we grow up, and what was it about you that said, no, I ain't doing this?
Yeah. So it's a great question and really is one that I reflected a lot on. And people in general, myself included, we could make choices to react certain ways, right? I think with me, and it comes from my family, right? Especially my parents who went through so much to migrate over to the US, went through the entire process, took several years in the making, but that resilience and that optimism. And I really can bottle it up into those two, right? That you will be knocked down, no doubt, several times with huge punches. Will you get up? And that was one that I was like, my daddy told me that no matter what, I get up and keep on going, keep on fighting. And that resilience stuck with me. And I would see it in him. I'm like, oh my God, he had to learn English. He had to do so many things to make it through and persevere, right? So I think in me, what was different is that notion of resilience, optimism. And I also think this is the selflessness that I get from him, from my father, who's now in heaven. But it's that willingness to help others. I don't even know that I was helping myself, but I was, right? So when things came down, I'll give you an example. Going through the district saying, hey, we need funding for such program. We don't have that kind of funding, Griselda. Why not? Well, we have allocated our budget already, and our students in that region probably won't pass. It was for an AP exam. They probably won't pass that exam. I'm like, seriously, did I just hear him say that, right? Did he just label us with unable to pass an exam that other people across the country can pass? So for me, that was like, I am going to show you that the power of our people and how we can come together and pass, and I don't even need your funding, right? So that I think is the optimism, the resilience, and the power of like, you just insulted myself and a group of my teammates back in
Yeah,
my
sure.
school.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm going to sh that we will show you in a nice way, right? We're not going to be violent, right? We're going to show you what it is that our students can do. And with the help of two or three teachers that volunteered their time on weekends to come and teach us, and willing students that were giving up Sundays to come and learn calculus or physics, we showed them. I'm like, look at the scores that we got, fours and fives. We can do it. And, we didn't need your money. Now, it would be very welcome if you now give us money and get us started. But we proved to you that we can do it. So really that, the power, the resilience, and I think you called me on it, the stubbornness. I am a little stubborn. And when I get told no, I find ways to get to that yes. And I insanely persevere that, and I persist on there is a yes because there's goodness behind the mission, what it is that we're trying to do. And so with that, we get some huge positive outcomes. That's one of them, right? Now that high school is a college prep school, it is highly regarded and certified.
Wow, that's
And
great.
the year that we did that, by the way, we sent out, I think it was a total of 30 students around the world for various schools, Oxford.
Wow.
I went to Stanford when my buddies went to Stanford,
Yeah, I
various
was going to
schools.
bring
Now
that
that
up. You went to an Ivy League school,
I
coming out of Brownsville, and I mean, Stanford, which
did, I
is
did.
arguably one of the best schools in the world. Boy, congratulations. That's great. Well, everybody looks at a hierarchy in a company as, whether or not you're considered a leader. But if you look at what you did, where you came from, how you fought, and especially for women, okay, minority women, you're a leader, you're an icon, and I don't know if we congratulate you enough for that, because you just kind of do your thing and don't look for the pat on the back. You're just kind of like, hey, here I am, how can I help you, right? and 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 that's very attractive, by the way, and very commendable as well. By the way,
Thank you.
when you talked about building a plant on a swamp. I
Yeah.
would have hated that project. You want to know why?
Why?
When I was a kid, I used to play in the swamps.
Okay.
I used to go across the train tracks against my mother's wishes, playing in the swamps, catch frogs, catch turtles. We built a raft. We thought we were like Mark Twain or whatever, on the swamps, and we would
Yeah.
do the raft and all that.
Okay.
And I used to love playing in the swamps. So I would have been no good on that project for you.
No, you would have huge value. You have a brilliant mind. But I'll tell you, like a couple ones that really stick near and dear to me in Malaysia, right? Going through Penang, Kuala Lumpur. I'm like, where exactly are we going to make this really awesome manufacturing facility? Literally, the business president and I are walking through literally with boots on swamp, and you're getting
Wow.
wet, right? It's like marshland. I'm like, wow, could we really make the foundation work here and all that, right? So anyway, so we walk through, we pick the industrial triangle that is going to, have our facility and make sure that it thrives. But that's what it was, right? Bintan, Indonesia was another one. You kind of just go and you're expanding that site. That was a brownfield expansion. But you go through, and then we reminisce and like, remember back in August or whatever month that was, walking through the swamps. And now you're sitting in this highly efficient manufacturing facility that people are doing their MDI, right? Daily improvement and walking the Gemba. I'm like, wow. From swamp to efficient manufacturing. How
I'm
cool is
sorry.
that?
I would have
You would
fought
have
you on
loved
that.
it.
I would have fought you on that. I would not have allowed that to happen, okay? Because I just love swamps, okay? Not the one in Washington, by the way, but.
I know we've talked about that, but I did leave a little bit. So you kind of have to for,
Oh, yeah, you have to
visas, you have
reserve.
to
Like
leave
in India, it's
58
the same
days.
way. Yeah,
Yeah,
right.
yeah. So anyway,
By the
so you
way,
have to leave later.
let me ask you though. I mean, what you referred to earlier about your stubbornness, your perseverance, remember Henry Ford? I think he had something. He said something to the effect, "If you think you can't, you will be right." So did that play into that whole building that facility in terms of your tenacity and like, we can do this.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, right? I mean, obviously you have to work. I had to work with the business leaders, right? And that specific
Sure.
example, there was only one company coming in, and I'll leave company names out, right? But it was one company coming in. Another project also in that region in Asia, it was a joint venture, right? But from that, right, what I loved is that in my early 20s here, or just out of college, I was going through working with government officials, business leader from one company, the partner company, business leader from my own company, convincing them of the market analysis and the customer segmentation and why that region was. But guess what? The power of data. With numbers and data, say, this is where we need to be, and this is why, quantified why, right? And with that, convince them. And lo and behold, we have a beautiful manufacturing location there, right? So I stick to what we talk about, Mark, and I know you preach this too, is the basics and the principles.
Right.
Data speaks in volumes, numbers talk and tell you a story. And when you stick to that, you can make great outcomes. Right? You
What
can
did
convince
Deming say?
people.
He said he Deming said it all in God we trust, all others bring
Yeah,
data.
exactly, right. So there's one Lord above that we're all going to follow, but everyone else, yeah, I got to speak in numbers and figure out, hey, why is it that that location is going to work for us, Griselda? And how are we doing now? And what's the market growth
Well,
potential?
it's interesting though that your values, your personality characteristics all kind of transcend through everything you do, I mean your career, I'm sure your personal life. By the way, your book is just to make sure we're going to put it up on the screen called Life Beyond the Border.
So actually, very good point. So Life Beyond the Border, which actually I do have that
Oh, there
one
it is.
right
Okay.
here. Yeah, so this
Yep.
is Life Beyond the Border. So I started with this one. My customer feedback, my readers initially said, Griselda, that's a great book. We love reading it. We would like for you to include more lessons learned on boardroom experience and your executive role. I was an executive for about 15 years of my 29-year career in corporate America. And I'm like, you know what? It was. I focused on, because it started, like I told you, with my early beginnings, grandmother and mom in Mexico, and then traverses across the Rio Grande into Texas, right? Where I was born and where I was, making my living with my family. But because of that, I didn't want to make it too long. And so I left a little bit of the boardroom experience out. It goes, no, girl, you got to put the from the border to the boardroom, and you have so much to share about what you learned as a female in the technical environment, in the aero and defense industry. What
Right.
did you take from that? What can we learn from you? So now this book is archived, and it's From the Border to the Boardroom, A Journey from Poverty to Passionate Purpose. So that is a new one that came out in October, and that's the one that I'm still waiting for myself. It's out
So
there now, but
we can get that on Amazon though too,
yes.
and we'll put a picture of the book up. You'll send that to me, and
Yes.
so people can actually see that. And no, that's phenomenal. And I guess that's there's not many people that you're going to find that has that path, you know. So your story is going to be incredibly interesting. So and I'll put it on my Lean Horizons website as something that people should read. Now let me ask you a question. As you've been working with different companies, whether the companies that you work for in your corporate career or your consulting career, you know, there's such a notion out there today, and many consultants make a lot of money trying to sell books and all that, telling everybody why all this stuff can't be done. Okay. Why lean can't be done, right? And then you come along and say, no, that's crap. We're going to do it. Okay. And you have demonstrated. So, you know, on my book, Flatlined, the tagline on that is why lean transformations fail, which everybody talks about, and what to do about it. Okay. Very few books really talk about what to do about it. And so, what do you see on the lean landscape today? And by the way, the whole consulting industry that you and I are both partners in, and well, we're not business partners, but we're partners, thought partners, and friends. What do you see out there as the landscape right now? You're a new person. Put yourself back a few years, and you're just getting out of school, and you heard about this thing called Lean, and you heard about Toyota, and you heard about Danaher, and you heard about all the companies you work for, and all these different I call them TLAs, three
TLAs.
letter acronyms. Okay, I have a TLA for a TLA, and all these buzzwords out there. You got TOC, you got Six Sigma, you've got demand flow technology, you've got Lean, you've got Toyota. You get into pedantic arguments that Lean and TPS are different, and it's not Gemba, it's Genba, and you get all these pedantic arguments that don't mean a damn thing at the end of the day. But what's your take on the whole industry that you now have been in for almost 2 years?
This is my take, and I hope I you know this shares with some of your viewpoints, I know just from knowing you. But I believe, you know, throughout the course of the last at least 20 years, right? Longer probably. But lean principles, as I learned them in Japan and the US, right? They work when done authentically and well, when you really apply the basic, you know, five core lean principles, I'll call it, and I'll mention what those are, right? Now, and I'll mention what those are. Fast forward at Honeywell, for example, right? I like to know Honeywell coming together and all that. When that came together, a lot of people left and became consultants. Great. They had huge success internally, and off they venture in making a name for themselves and consultant, right? But it was the focus of how do I make a name for myself? How do I differentiate? So from there is born the how do I make that unique? How do I make, you know, 5S, 6S? How do I make, you know, this something
Don't
else? And
get me
so,
going on that one, by the way. Don't get
yeah,
me
but
going on the
everybody
success
starts
thing.
making
Yeah.
their own. Isn't that crazy? Even, and I'll call this out, Lean Six Sigma. Come get your Lean Six Sigma certification. I'm like, there's a lean certification, and I mastered in both. I have a black belt and I have my lean master, right? And I did it for a reason. Lean Six Sigma to me does not exist. It's the lean principles, and there's a lot of low-hanging fruit that you do with standardization and problem-solving, engaging people around what the customer really wants. And that's lean principles, lean master. That was my project focus, and that's what I actually opted to focus on because I thought there was power behind it, right? And there's Six Sigma. One focuses on waste elimination. The other one focuses on reducing variation in a process. Different tools. It's like having a toolbox, right? I'm going to pick these for certain things to standardize and make better and optimize. And I'm going to pick this because my process has too much variation across several factors. There's two tools, two buckets, and you can't mix and match. But consultants did that because it was easier to sell the LSS, bucket,
right.
right? The Lean Six
That's
Sigma.
right.
And so it caused mass confusion. And I think with that, we strayed away from the purity of lean. And what I at least learned from my sensei saying, hey, it is about, and I'm going to go into what I believe, right? What I teach my customers is defining value in the eyes of a customer. You all have ideas, but what matters is what does the customer truly want? And you need to go see it and understand it, right? Identify those value-added steps of what they truly want, because sometimes they don't even know what they want in a quantified fashion. Identify the value, make those flow, right? Only value-added steps flowing, power of that, right? All that 90% of waste, kill it, right? And then you pull when you cannot flow. Maybe you're delivering in the, from the US to other countries. And then you continuously improve in pursuit of perfection. So it starts with the customer in the eyes of the customer. And in the end, it's all about people making things happen, great things happen, right? And that's the cycle of lean from a customer to people making things happen for the customer. And every stakeholder in between matters.
Well, beautifully said. Beautifully said. I keep seeing things being repackaged, and because I really feel for, and this is why one of the reasons I really appreciate you, I really feel for the people starting out, and they walk into a myriad of buzzwords and concepts and debates, and it's like, well, geez, if I wanted to join a particular religion, there's a Bible. And I go to that Bible and I read it and I understand the nature of that religion, right? And if I want to become a Hindu, for example, it's pretty clear. There's four tenets of Hinduism, which many I believe in, by the way, like reincarnation. I do believe in that. But there's a framework, okay? Right now, it doesn't seem like there's any defined framework. Or, I'll take that back. It seems as if there are multitude of frameworks that are confusing as heck to people. You just mentioned one of them with the whole Lean Six Sigma thing, which has been, and that started all with Arnon Sharma at TBM, by the way.
It did.
He coined this thing Lean Sigma. And the crazy thing about that, he made a lot of money on that.
I know, that's why they keep doing it.
But did a disservice to the industry, to the consulting, to the lean community, I should say. But the ironic thing was he was locked arms with Iwata from Shingajitsu. And Nikhil privately told me that that whole thing was a disaster. I mean, they were really distasteful about what he did. And by the way, I'll tell you a quick little story. When Iwata, he God rest his soul, he was a friend and all that, and asked me to have dinner with him. And he wasn't even working for us at the time. And I went to have dinner with him. I picked him up, and the interpreter, Reiko Kano, wasn't even with him. It was just him and me. And he, I said, well, geez, how are you doing, Iwata-san? Because he was sick. And I'm fine, Delizio-san. So anyway, 2 months later, he died, right? And his daughter, Kumi, told me that was his way of saying goodbye to you, So, yeah.
Powerful.
Iwata once said to me, we were gauging in our menu, in at Jake Break, we were gauging 1 out of 15 parts. Delizio-san, what about the other 14? This goes back to SPC, right? And I started explaining SPC to him, like he doesn't know, right? Control charts, and we look at the data, 7 in a row, we do this, And Delizio-san, you are not checking the other 14. Why not? Put it into standard work. I know, Iwata-san, you don't understand SPC, control charts and variation. Delizio-san, would you get fly an airline that only checks 1 out of 15 airplanes?
Gotcha.
Bingo. Got it. Got it. I mean, those are the kind of things that these guys came out with. And,
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
why are you targeting 98% on-time delivery? Nikhil told me, why don't you call the 2% right now and tell them you're going to be late?
Absolutely. Or a safety metric that we're going to get
Or
point
zero
0.001 or
defects. Why are
whatever.
you guys doing 3.4 parts per million on Six Sigma?
Exactly.
What? It's a mind. It's all about mindset, right?
It's
And
a
in the end,
mindset.
when I put that, I remember I put that on LinkedIn, and engineers just nailed me on the
Oh,
technical reason
absolutely.
why you can have zero defects.
Right.
Okay. Okay. And they missed the point about mindset.
Absolutely. I have a cool story on that, and it'll be a quick one, but It's on
Sure.
the safety metric, even, right? I remember, and like you say, right? They fire you, or they fire the leader, or the president, or whatever. It's in chuckles, but it's for memory, so that you remember. It's a
Oh,
culture
yeah.
shock, and you
Oh, yeah.
remember it, right? I had all these cement heads, they call them, right? The blockheads, and so I'm like, "Sorry, Mr. President, he didn't really mean that, but he did." So get the point up. But the topic was safety, and we're putting up a safety metric, and it was going to be 0.01 or some number of T, you know, TRIR, total recordable incident rate, right? So he looks and goes, "Okay, let's start with her right here. Griselda, put your hand up." He grabs a hammer and he's gonna nail, you know, my hand. I'm like, "Okay, now mission accomplished. You got your 0.01 or whatever, right?" He goes, "It is zero. You do not want to hurt anybody. If you put a target of point whatever, that means it's not zero. And I'm going to go and, you know, hurt someone today, get that over with, and now move on." He goes, "It's so." He was just changing the mindset of zero defects, zero, you know, incidents. You got to think like that, because that's the fifth principle, the pursuit of perfection. Will we get there? Probably not. It'll be costly, but it's going to be a journey that, when we half the time or half the cost or improve significantly, you're going to build upon that, and then more, and then more. Eventually you get to zero.
I love that example. See, that's powerful. I mean, okay, so your hand is broken now because, but you achieved your goal because you got your one,
Your 0.01.
it reminds me of the story when I don't know what company did this. It might have been Toyota. So somebody they were buying from a Japanese supplier and they wanted an AQL level of like whatever point something percent.
Right.
So they got the pallet of parts in, and on top was a plastic bag with the defective parts.
Yeah.
And the note was on it was, we do not want you wanted to make defective parts, but here's your 0.5%.
Here
Okay.
it is. You got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
But
target
no, those are
setting.
the, you and I talked offline about this, that lean is not intuitive. It's not,
No.
everybody says lean is common sense. And
Right.
when Nikhil came in and told us, slow your machine down, you're making it too fast, you're making too money. That was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
Or I mean just things like that, and you need to do more changeovers.
yeah. Right.
Why? We're
Why?
trying to eliminate changeovers. Ollie White, EOQ. We're trying to get rid of all this, right? No, 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 no. You
Exactly.
need to do more changeovers.
Yeah.
Your customers do not order the way you choose to produce, okay?
Exactly. We were making these impellers, right? And it was these wheels, turbine wheels, and we had a twin spindle that the company had paid a lot of money for, this machining center, that twin spindle. And he comes over and he puts a tape over one of the two spindles, and he
I
goes,
love it.
"You only need one to make this flow work." And I had run them. I'm like, "He's totally right, right?"
Cycle time,
And
tack
of
time.
course,
Yep.
the leader that had bought that machine goes, "Griselda, this is pure waste." I'm like, "No, sir. Having twin spindle producing all of these excess, you know, wheels that are just going to sit there and create inventory and eventually get damaged and, you know, blow up our quality metric is waste." You know, he is right on point that we don't need a twin spindle. You spend a lot of money. It was his baby buying that machine, right? So I'm like, "I hate to break it to you, but please let us run it at least for a month with one spindle, get the flow going." We went from 60 days to literally same day impellers in that area.
Awesome. 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 Isn't that amazing? Yeah. And people don't realize that built up inventory that you eliminated is really representative of your lead time. That's all lead time. And
Is. Yeah.
I had a CFO one time tell me, they were measuring everybody on machine uptime and they were doing all the wrong things because of it. But I said, why are you doing that? He says, we have to get return on investment on our equipment. And I'm thinking, I'm an ex-finance guy. I'm like, how do you take return on investment to the bank?
Yeah.
So I said to him, hey, you just bought a new Lexus, didn't you? He goes, yeah, great car. I said, hey, by the way, when you get home tonight, are you going to run it around the block 100 times just to get utilization out of it?
Exactly, right?
He goes, why
Yes.
would I do that? I go, I don't know. I'm trying to understand why you do it here.
I know, I know, I know. People would like the factory buzz, right? The blow and the clanking of parts and machines and all that. The only sound I really like is the rhythm of tack. Is it coming in a box at that pace, whatever pace the customer told you? That's it.
Well, tact is, it does mean beat and rhythm, and it's a German word, right? And it does mean beat and rhythm. I got an episode on that in one of my earlier,
Yeah.
might have been episode six. We're early on, all about tact time.
Yeah.
But it's hard. It's hard for, you're an advocate. Another thing I admire about you is you're an advocate of the basics. Okay.
Yes.
Basics work. Everybody looks for that
Agreed.
silver bullet. Sometimes they're not sexy, but they work. they
They
work.
do.
And
They do.
everybody's looking for that golden solution that's going to just propel them up to. I get this all the time when CEOs call and say, "Hey, we want to do DBS." They learn about it at Harvard and all that, so they still teach it up there. And I said, "Well, if you want to do DBS, go work for Danaher."
Right. Yeah.
Okay, it's the only way you're going to do DBS, you know.
Absolutely.
But what they
Absolutely.
really want, most of them will call, really, what they really want is the results of Danaher. Okay,
Absolutely. And
and
that
that's
is a very different ask, right? There's the HOS, there's the TPS, there's the DBS, right? Honeywell,
right.
Toyota, Danaher.
That's right.
Now, they were successful because they brewed it themselves. They created it themselves. It was around their culture, their values, and that's why it works, right? So I always tell my cousin, goes, first, I need to spend some time learning about you, your team, your culture, how you work, and your vision, right? Now, with that comes the IRBOS, Business Operating System, right? The one we talked about yesterday with Dan. But it has to be nurtured and grown with the culture and the people so that the ownership is there. The mishaps, right? You went this way, you learned something, you went the other way. That is powerful. And that's what really creates an operating system that sustains at any location. But you cannot copy. You cannot take one. You cannot take DBS and poof, drop it into Honeywell, for example. It just won't work, right? It's not theirs.
Even the tenets of DBS, we had to do it differently at the different businesses we had. Okay, it wasn't like one, plug and play. You can't do that. And I think something that you said earlier just now is getting the input and buy-in, even if it's not the right path. The still, if you eliminate and just tell people what to do, they may do it. It won't sustain, but it's also not theirs. And I always said to people that the Danaher business system was not immune to Kaizen. I mean, if you can't Kaizen the Danaher business, and so many lean corporate lean groups I see, it's stagnant, and to change something, it takes an act of God. I'm not a fan of big of audits because they all say, "Well, yeah, our operations are our customers." Then how come you're auditing them? I never saw a supplier audit a customer. Okay, and so that the audits to me, I just did an episode on that. It to me just creates all kinds of bad behaviors and situations. But Griselda, so how do we? And I'm asking you a question that I don't know the answer to. How do we really get the lean community back? I'm not looking for an answer from you, but it always on my mind. How do we take people like yourself who understand the essence of what we're doing and others that you and I know and get the lean community back on track in terms of, bringing, you want to talk about variation? Okay. How do we eliminate the variation that's out there and all the noise that's out there of the self-serving people who are trying to, create a name for themselves and become the next Deming or the next Ono, and the next Duran, who I personally knew. How do we get people to say, "Hey, look, just do the basics." It doesn't mean that the Toyota production system can't be improved, but don't try to improve it before you haven't even tried it yet. I don't
Absolutely.
know. I mean, does that must bother you, no?
It does. It does because I think, I mean, there was power in manufacturing and the skilled trades back in the 90s and all of that, right? I think there was a thriving economy and there was a lot of great things happening, right? Over time, for whatever reason, right, in this myriad of reasons, we won't get into here, but that doesn't feel like it's as strong, right? Skilled trades, for example, apprenticeship programs, so many to very few to almost none in some areas, right?
Powerful. They were powerful too.
They were powerful and people would come there and learn, right? I was like, you got to get that college degree, right? I got my college degree, yeah. But what I learned the most was rolling up my sleeves and getting things done with people on the
Doing it.
shop floor that knew the process the best, right? So what I think we need to really do, as I say, get back to the basics of lean and working together. It's like, for example, when I went to a Kaizen event and there was people in the area and I knew there was someone that I'll call it a hard nut to crack, right? I really partnered with that person because number one, hard nut to crack. They were also vocal and they were respected amongst the group. If I'm able to turn that mind around towards the benefit of how lean helps him and his team in doing their work, he's going to talk to the others, and when they see him shift, There I go. The entire site comes along, the entire operation, right? Same thing in how we do it across the board. Take a broken company, right? I work with many, but it's let's take, like in my case, right? In one of my roles was like, let me get the three most broken businesses and let's make some transformational change by teaching them the principles and standing back and supporting them. I'm not gonna give them the answer. I'm gonna teach them. What ended up happening, Mark, is not only did they learn the principles, but my team in India was trying to overdo my team in China. And my team in China and all that were trying to overdo the team in the US, right? And the one in Mexico and the one in Ireland. So before you know it, there was this friendly competition. They were learning from each other. And I was just teaching the tools and guiding and coaching and supporting,
That's
making sure
fun.
that we're moving
Yeah.
in the right direction. But they were moving the ball, sprinting it forward, right? By applying what they had learned because they felt power and they felt that their input, their opinion, their actions mattered. And it made a difference for the business.
I can just see it now. Hey, by the way, do you know what the guys in Ireland said about you guys? They said that you're not going to be able to blah, blah, blah. I mean, I could just see the you egging them on a little bit. I think that's phenomenal, and getting that buy-in, I think, is something that's always missed. We want to tell people what to do, as opposed to let them come to their own answer just by asking a question. I mean, Shinkajitsu was great at that, as you know. I would ask Nakao a question, and I knew he knew the damn answer. And Thursday night at 2 in the morning, I'd wake up and I'd say, "Oh, I know the answer now. I got it. Hit me." And I still remember those lessons, just like your example with. With what you said earlier, you remember that hammer incident, right? And I hope you recovered, by the way. I hope
Oh,
you
we of
didn't.
course we didn't go through it. It was proving a point.
I
I
know
was
that.
not
I
going to
know
put my
that. I'm
finger
only
under
kidding. I'm
that.
only kidding. I'm only kidding. Anyway, I think that's phenomenal. So I would like to have you back. There's a lot of topics that we need to talk about, okay? And I won't go through them now, but there's a million of them that we need to go through. So we should maybe make it a regular type of thing for you to come back and
I'd
give us
love
your
to.
perspective and your experience and your view and how maybe you handle some of these things. So we will do that. This is just maybe like an intro to Griselda. Okay.
Great.
But I have some questions for you.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, this is going to be kind of like a personality, not a personality test, but like a, who is this lady? Okay, we all learn
All right.
the
All right.
demographics. We learn about Texas and the border town and your Stanford education and your Shingajitsu and consulting and all that stuff. But now we're going to really find out.
Oh boy, I'm a little nervous, but go for
Okay,
it.
you should be, because wait till you see these questions.
All right.
What's your favorite color?
Red.
You have red on.
Always. My car is red. All my
And why
cars have
is
been
it?
red.
Is it really? Now, why does that color resonate with you?
Red is bold, it's courage, it's blood flow, it's sabor, salsa. It is, to me,
Ooh.
emotion, love, and a whole bunch of things captured in one cool color that grabs your attention.
Wine, beer, or hard liquor?
I'm gonna have to go. When you say hard liquor, it sounds bad, but it is hard liquor, cocktails.
Well, what I mean, like scotch, whiskey,
Yeah,
gin, vodka, that's hard liquor.
vodka, tequila. Yeah, hard
Yeah.
liquor, cocktails.
Okay. I'd go both wine and hard liquor, so I'm not a beer guy.
Yeah, me neither.
What's your, speaking of that, what's your favorite type of cuisine?
Ooh, you're gonna like this one. It is Italian. And I'm Mexican and I love my Mexican food, but Italian is
And
unique.
do you like, and do you, what specific dish in Italian do you like the best?
So pastas, and I'm gonna leave it at that because I'm not, I went to
Okay.
Italy and we dabbled. I thought I knew a lot about pasta until I went to Italy. Oh my goodness, like making it from, the noodles in whatever shape and size, coming up with however they flavor them up. There's the one that has some little bit of bacon, a little bit of cheese, a little bit of pasta. What is the name, Mark? I forgot. Yes, carbonara. Oh my God. We would wake up in the morning. We would
I
have it
love
for
that.
breakfast, lunch, and
Oh
dinner if
yeah.
we could.
Oh yeah.
So
I'm
anyway,
not
so
saying this because I'm Italian. I love all foods. I've eaten some great. Well, speaking of that, what's the craziest thing you've ever eaten? You've been a world traveler, so I know you've run into things.
that is crazy. So two things come to mind, but I'm going to tell you the one that stuck with my mind the most because I learned a lesson from it. I traveled the world, And we were in China. It was China. And it was squid. And they pride themselves in like the aquariums and the live fresh fish and all that. And like it
Oh
comes
yeah.
to you fresh on your plate.
Yes, it
Great.
does.
Okay. So I ordered something. It came on my plate, you know, some type of squid and other things. And then I'm, you know, using the chopsticks, put it in my mouth, then I got slapped by the thing. I'm like, what? And so from there, I had a rule. I'm like, okay, I like my food fresh and I love sushi, but it cannot move when it's in my mouth. Because that one was a little too fresh and I don't know what reaction it got, but it was an experience. So that's one that I will
He got
not
mad at
forget.
you.
It got mad at me, rightfully so.
You know, my
So that.
crazy, I've been all kinds of crazy stuff, especially in Asia, but you know, horse meat, sashimi and all that, horse meat and all that, and snake and all the crazy things, sea slugs and fish eyeballs, and the cub made me do that. The craziest thing I ever ate in my life, you're never gonna guess where it's from. Mexico.
Mexico. I can
I
probably guess
had,
what it is.
go ahead.
So there's a couple of things that come to mind. Oh, I don't know if I can say this on a podcast, but there's two parts of an animal that some Mexicans made into delicacies. One of them is brain, the other one is testicles.
Yeah, I've had Rocky Mountain oysters.
There you
Yeah,
go. Better. I should have thought about that.
but not in Mexico. I had that in Erie, PA, but of all places, I was in Monterey, and I had ant larvae.
Oh, interesting.
And I thought they
Very.
were just jerking around with me. I've been to Mexico a million times, you know, but and then they started eating it with tortilla chips. They were eating it. It's ant larvae. Okay. I never had that before, but I had to try it. So I
There
had
you
raw
go.
kangaroo meat too, but that to me is the weirdest one. Okay, let's see. Where are we here? Boy, we're really getting to know you. What's your favorite outdoor activity?
Favorite outdoor activity, honestly, is reading a book outside on my hammock.
Okay,
Relaxation.
with tequila?
Sometimes, not always. Actually,
Okay.
Mark, as I age, I notice that my stomach is a little bit more picky about what substance or alcohol I put in it. I'm like,
Yeah,
I
I
used
know.
to have two, three glasses of wine, no problem. Now one is like, whoa, what happened there? So I don't know.
I
Maybe it's a
know,
good
I
thing, maybe
know,
not.
I know. I heard about that about older people, so I'll let you know. I'll let you know when I get there, okay?
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah,
Just dye my hair, but there's plenty of gray in there, trust me.
okay. What's your favorite rock band?
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Do you have one? You may not have one, but.
I actually do.
Okay.
And it stems from family upbringing back in Texas, and it's a band called Los Bukis. You may or may not know it because it's Hispanic,
Really?
but yeah.
Okay.
So Marco Antonio and
Awesome.
Los Bukis is one that is near and dear to my heart because I remember cleaning house with mom, listening to that music and kind of going to the beat. So
Do they
other
have a
than that,
favorite? Do they have a favorite song, or do you have a favorite song?
do I have a favorite song? I don't know. I love music in general, so I don't know if I can pick the one. My alma
My
mater, the
favorite
fight
song,
song,
my
is a
wife.
good one.
Oh, you all my. Well, my favorite song, my wife hates. I think it's my favorite song. It's
Why is
by
that?
Earth, Wind, and Fire called Reasons. I just love Reasons, that song.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of one, like James Arthur, for example, right? Say You Won't Let Go. My husband and I can relate to a lot of the, lyrics in that song. So it's become one of our favorites, but, we love, dancing to it. But if I'd have a favorite, it'd be hard for me. That's one just because it's near and dear to him and I. But other than that, I just love all kinds of music genres. I love country. I'm Texan. So country and Latin music is what I love the most. Anything within there.
Yeah, I'm pretty eclectic. I like all kinds of music from all generations, but how about favorite movie?
Favorite movie? I'm going to go with, ooh, there's two that come to mind.
Okay, you too. I'll allow that.
Okay,
I'll make an
Gladiator.
exception on my score sheet. Don't worry.
Great. Gladiator is one, and the
Ooh.
other one is The Notebook.
The Notebook. Okay.
Book, yeah.
Okay.
A powerful story about a couple with some
I would
challenges.
be sitting around at a cocktail party or something, and somebody will ask that question, right? And people will say things like, "Oh, I love Schindler's List, Gone with the Wind." You know, how about you, Mark? Dumb and Dumber.
There you go. That's cool. I like it. That's a great
Is my
movie.
all-time favorite movie, by the way. I
That's a
mean, Dumb and
great
Dumber.
movie. Yeah.
Oh yeah. The sequel wasn't that good, but Dumb and Dumber was good. If you had a chance to spend an hour talking with somebody, whether they're here now or from the past in history, who would that be?
Oh, I'm gonna have to go
Besides,
with.
and I'm not going to allow you to say Jesus Christ, okay? He's
Okay.
off the table right now for this particular question.
No problem. So present or no longer present, right? You said,
Yeah,
or
they could be gone. They could be 100 years
okay.
ago. They could be whatever, 1,000 years
I'm
ago.
going to, yeah, I'm gonna go with RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg,
Ooh.
former Supreme Court justice, just because of the power of what she did and and her mission throughout all of her life in some very challenging times. And she made a difference, right? So she was planting seeds so that we could take those seeds and grow them into other, right? So she planted the initial seeds of what now, and I'm not going to say it's like, women empowerment and women, but there's a lot of things that, women weren't allowed to do. That's just kind of how it
No,
started, right?
I agree with you on that, but for the person that I would put in that category that I would like to talk to, one of my top three
Yeah.
is Margaret Thatcher.
That another
Because
wonderful,
she
amazing
broke
person.
not a glass ceiling, she broke a steel ceiling. I mean, she and she didn't give a rat's ass about anybody. It's like, not,
No.
I mean it that way, but like,
Right.
here's what I think, and I'm not playing games with you, man, you know.
Right.
I thought she was awesome. I thought she
Yeah,
was
yeah,
awesome.
yeah. And then
But
just powerful women, right? And I mean, there's a
yeah.
lot of men, by the way. Please don't. I'm a whole firm believer in that, women will thrive just as men will thrive, but it's a matter of what choices we make. And some people, whether Hispanics or female or others, might have it a little bit more difficult just because of the notion of society and socioeconomic status.
That's
So
right.
be it. Like I mentioned earlier, right? Let those challenges propel you forward. Doesn't matter who you are, or where you come from, anybody can succeed.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, this is kind of a crazy one, but it might be hard to do, but if you were to create a slogan for your life, what would it be?
Wow, a slogan for my life.
I'll let you think about that one.
Okay.
Favorite animal?
Favorite animal, a cheetah.
Cheetah.
Yep.
Wow. The fastest creature on Earth.
Yes. It's all
Wow.
about
Why
speed and
a cheetah? Go ahead.
it's a matter of speed, right? I think a lot of what I teach is I think people focus on way too many metrics and variables. You focus on the essence of time and speed. That brings along everything else, right? Even quality. And so, anyway, that's why I think the cheetah to me is power because it's swift, it's fast. And that's one thing that I've
Wow.
thought through life. I'm like, hey, if I was reborn, I'd be a cheetah in my new life.
You know, I
Plus, I
never
like
would have
cats.
expected that answer, and that's a great answer, you know. And by the way, just getting back into lean, so many miss the whole notion of the competitive advantage you can have, even if you're a commodity business, with reducing lead time. And you're right, quality gets better, costs get better, everything gets better, right?
So can I go
That.
back to the slogan one?
Sure.
All right. Because that was coming to me and then you shifted me to another question. But
I know,
now.
because I want to give you time. That was a hard one to kind
No,
of just.
that's good. No, but
It's not like,
actually,
what's your favorite color, you know?
you're
Yeah.
right. But this one is really one that it's simple, but it's one that I've taken, near and dear to my heart. It's the power of optimism works. And it's truly that. It's this pow, right?
Awesome.
It's
Awesome.
power because I do think that there's many things that happen in life, but if you take them with the optimistic attitude, with a glass half full mindset, you can make wonderful things happen. And many people choose to do that and persevere
Well, you
past a
know,
lot of challenges.
haven't met you in person though. You know, I think the other thing that shows is walk into the room, you walk in, you're powerful. You have a presence and like a aura about you, but it's not a boastful aura. It's not a hey, look at me aura. It's just like a confident, secure, And that I don't know if you can actually buy that. You just got that, and but that I think is maybe an offshoot from all the things you said about how you grew up, the lessons you've learned, the setbacks you've had, and all that. So that's kind of cool. So
Thank you.
that's a good slogan. Okay, so very good. And I got a lot more. Maybe next time we'll do some more. I got some more on here that we'll kind of do. But anyway, there's just kind of some fun questions I wanted to ask and to get to know you a little bit, and all that. So
Wonderful.
Griselda, this has been great. You and I, after the new year, need to. I think this is going to air on June. Oh, June, I'll be okay. July.
January.
January, got the wrong J word here.
Yeah.
January 15th, I think we're going to release this.
Great.
And not that now people are going to watch this video and duh, Mark, it's already January 15th. Why are you telling me this? But anyway, this has been great. And we got to maybe make this a kind of a regular type of thing. And
Absolutely.
every so often, and there's a million topics. You and I can talk offline about different things we think the community needs, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And so actually I was coming up with an idea on this, Mark. So
Sure.
love working with you, love your thinking, and I think we're very similar style and thought. But traveling the world somewhere, doesn't have to be far, but somewhere, but a podcast in action, right? What observations are we making in that location, place, company, wherever? But it's, a little bit of a travel with brilliant minds and talk about observations and what we see and what our audiences can learn from. Maybe.
I think that will be awesome. Well, we can talk about that and figure that out. And by the way, if you think you and I are similar, you better see a doctor. You're in trouble. if we think alike. But
Similar thinking, how's that? Unique
similar thinking.
individual,
I'd
similar
even worry
thinking.
about that if I were you. Okay, so no, I'm only kidding. But Griselda, this has been great. Any last comments, any last thoughts?
Just a sincere thank you. I appreciate you. I love learning from you and following all that you do. And so let's keep in touch. And for everyone out there, hopefully you enjoyed it and hopefully you carry on the slogan of let your optimism carry you forward. It's going to be fun.
Awesome. Awesome.
All right.
Likewise to you too. So I look forward to learning from you as well. And I am definitely going to use that hammer example. That's a great one.
Wonderful. Okay.
Okay, Griselda, we'll see you next time. Okay, this was episode 51, believe it or
All
not.
right.
And we'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Lean 911 podcast. I'll be happy to address your questions or feedback on future episodes. Email me at mark@lean911.com. You can check out our other episodes by visiting our website at lean911.com, our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to podcasts. This is your host, Mark DeLuzio. Thanks for listening.